If you're innovating, creating, or making a difference,
this show is for you. Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
Over Coffee will be on Christmas season hiatus for the next few weeks. During that time, we're going to be rebroadcasting some of our most popular podcasts of 2016, starting with this one, with author and entrepreneur Maxwell Ivey Jr., which seems particularly appropriate now as we're all recovering from the turkey and trimmings.
We all have those times when we're going to eat stuff we shouldn't. The thing to do is to try to put yourself in positions where you don't have those opportunities as often.
Suppose you're a maker or any other kind of entrepreneur. There are not enough hours in the day, so how are you supposed to find time to exercise and make healthy food choices? Author, success coach, and entrepreneur Maxwell Ivey Jr. knows the ways around that. Max, as he prefers to be called, is the proprietor of the Midway Marketplace, an online business where he sells amusement equipment, drawing on his background in the carnival business. You may well recognize Max's name from an earlier episode of Over Coffee, in which we talked about his first book, Leading You Out of the Darkness into the Light, A Blind Man's Guide to Success. And Max has now published his second book, entitled It's Not the Cookie, It's the Bag, an easy-to-follow guide for weight loss success. The following podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice. If you have health or nutrition-related questions, please contact a medical professional. Max, first of all, welcome back to Over Coffee. It's great to have you again. And tell me, please, you've got this great new book, It's Not the Cookie, It's the Bag. Before we get into talking about that, I'd love to know more about your own journey to getting healthy.
Well, yes, like a lot of people, it started with a health emergency. I was staying in a motel in Port Lavaca, Texas, and I peed the bed during the night. The next morning, my family noticed that the skin on my legs was tight and discolored, so I was immediately taken to a doctor. He said, you either need to get healthy or you aren't going to be around here very much longer. So as soon as that season was over, and I should mention for anybody who doesn't know, I grew up in the carnival business, so in the carnival business, most everything is done by seasons, and usually if you're going to make a big change, it'll be at the end of one. So I got with a good doctor. First thing she did was notice that I had sleep apnea, or she thought I did. Got a sleep study and got that addressed with a CPAP machine. And about 4 years after that was when I started going through the process of having gastric surgery and losing over 250 pounds. And now being in the best shape that I've ever been in, no longer on any prescription medicine, no high blood pressure, high cholesterol, any of that stuff. My blood pressure is really good. My gastric surgeon was actually afraid for a while that my weight was not going to stop going down. So I wasn't this good. I wasn't this well off physically when I was in junior high school or high school or even as a kid. So I'm very happy with where I'm at now. And, you know, if it took a bit of a scare to get me here, you know, I will accept that. And hopefully by us sharing this conversation and me writing this book, a lot of people won't let their physical health get that bad before they address it.
So glad that you're healthy and, as you say, lost more than 250 pounds. Your book mentions you used to weigh about 512. So, wow, amazing achievement here. Congratulations.
Thank you.
How did you first decide to write your new book? This is your second one. It's Not the Cookie, It's the Bag.
Well, I was working on my memoir last Thanksgiving and Christmas, and it wasn't going like I wanted it to. And instead of getting frustrated, I just was looking around for something else that I could share. And I was, as most people do, I was listening to all the ads on TV for exercise products and fitness centers and weight loss centers. And I thought, well, even though I had gastric surgery, I still had to learn a lot about diet and food and making better choices. A lot of things that I thought were generally healthy, I found out were not so healthy for me. So I figured with all the stuff I've learned over the last 3 or 4 years, I've got just as much to share as anybody else does. And that's how I decided to write the book. And I, you know, I don't know, but for me, when a book is right, then you don't have any trouble writing the next chapter. You actually have trouble turning the laptop off and going to bed at night. So when I wrote for 3 hours the first time I started working on it, I figured this must be what I'm supposed to be working on right this minute.
That is the best kind of creative process right there. What I really like about your book is this is not a diet book. It's more of a lifestyle change for the real world is how I would describe it. What were some of the misconceptions that you mentioned about what's healthy and what isn't when you start to think about weight loss and getting healthy?
Well, for starters, I did not realize that your body can take in so much in liquid as opposed to solid. That should be obvious to me and to anybody else, but, you know, just so much more, your body can process so much more liquid than it can solid. And I was taking in a lot of my calories in milk, juice, sodas, regular coffee. And one of the biggest changes I made was to learn to swap those liquids for solid. So when you start replacing milk with low-fat cheese or cottage cheese or string cheese, and you start replacing juices with actual fruit or dried fruit, and you start filling that tummy up a lot faster, you don't eat nowhere near as much. And, you know, it's one of those things we've all been told from a young age that milk and juice are good for you. That's where you get all your vitamins. So you be sure and drink a lot of it. But it's one of those things as you start to get older that really works against you. And, you know, a couple of the other things I've realized is I think a lot of people think that exercise has to be hard, that it has to hurt. And to my way of thinking, if you're in good shape and you're trying to get in even better shape, or you're trying to run a marathon, you're trying to do something that's, you know, very, very difficult, then perhaps doing exercises and pushing yourself to the point of pain works for that person. But for most people, if it's painful, you're not going to do it again tomorrow or the next day. And that's what we got to get to. We got to get to stuff that's repeatable, stuff that, if not fun, at least isn't painful.
And in fact, I really dislike the idea of simply calisthenics for calisthenics' sake. As makers, as entrepreneurs, that's not something you have a whole lot of time for.
Well, that's true.
What do you yourself are an entrepreneur, do to get in shape that's fun and that isn't simply wasting your time?
Well, I feel like anytime I can educate or inform or inspire myself to do more, that's not wasted time. So the best thing I do is when I'm riding my bike that doesn't go anywhere, or walking on the treadmill, or out in the yard walking with a family member, I always like to have an audio book or a podcast or something where I feel like the time isn't totally wasted, because as I'm sure you know, we don't have a lot of time in our day where we just turn everything off and listen to another person, whether it be a conversation or a video or audio or something. And so, you know, to me, I feel like anybody who isn't reading, isn't informing themselves, isn't bringing in new information, isn't growing, that they're not going to be much of an entrepreneur for long. That's my approach to it. So I feel like if the other thing you can do during that exercise time is a mind-numbing, repetitive process, you can get in touch with your body, you can do some deep breathing, and you can meditate. You can do what I like to call modern meditation, which I think you mentioned was one of your favorite parts of the book.
That was absolutely one of my favorites, because if you think of traditional meditation, if you're an entrepreneur, you don't have time to sit in a corner, light a candle, maybe go om a few times.
Well, that's true.
What do you do instead?
That's it. You have to find everyday activities that lead themselves to meditation. And, you know, for people who work on an assembly line, who do repetitive jobs over and over again, there is a rhythm to the job and to the machine. And if the person working one of those kinds of jobs is, you know, will focus in on it, they can pretty much block everything else out, and it can become a source of meditation. I have a friend, Alex Accordi, who, after she read that chapter, she said, you know, I've now realized that when I'm in traffic and the red light goes on in front of me, that I have at least a minute to 2 minutes before my car is going to move again. And she says, even though it may mean somebody honks at me, I close my eyes and take a few deep breaths and wait for the light to turn green. And I'm like, you know, I would have never thought to mention that, because you never can tell where telling people to do stuff while they're driving will get you. But it just shows that once people get the idea that there are lots of opportunities to do something, if they're just creative about it, then you start hearing, I didn't think about that one, but that's a good one. So, you know, I mentioned having to groom the dog, you know, if you have a pet, you have to brush them, you have to pet them, you have to feed them, you have to walk them. And those may seem like boring chores that you hate, but those are times when you're not doing anything with your hands, you're not talking, they're perfect times for what I like to call modern meditation. So
I confess that since reading that, we have two cats. And when one jumps on my keyboard, now instead of, oh, kitty, I've got to get this done, I do stop and take the time and pet her and just kind of focus and pay attention, which is a great way to change the way that you see that, I think.
Yeah, and for a lot of people that are entrepreneurs that are listening to this, a lot of them work from home. And the only person because I've got a dog, and I realize she's more human than I am some days. The only person they're going to see all day is their dog or their cat. And I like to refer to Penny as my mindfulness coach because she never worries about whether I'm busy or not. She's never thinking, what am I going to do tomorrow? She's like, I feel like eating, I'm going to eat. I feel like I'm itchy, I'm going to go find that guy that scratches me. You know, so I used to get mad at her too. I used to go, Penny, I'm trying to do a blog post. Get away from me. But then I realized she's not going to listen to me. She's going to do what Penny wants to do. And so I decided, well, I'll pet her for 5 or 10 or 15 minutes. And so now when people ask me about Penny, I say, well, her job is to remind me when it's time to put the laptop down and do my real job of scratching the places she can't reach.
My kitty cats would not appreciate being compared to a DOG, but they're just like that. They are mindfulness coaches. They're the cats in charge around here. Given your business background, you'll be familiar, especially coming from a carnival, with a problem that's really common for entrepreneurs. No time, lots of stress, and no really good food choices. What do you do with that?
Yeah, it is very difficult with food choices. And I think the first place to start is for people to realize that while they're not going to make a perfect choice every time. And if you have a day where your choice isn't what you would like it to have been or what your doctor or your spouse would have hoped you'd have chosen, you can forgive yourself and move on and do better the next day. But some of the things we can do is we can prepare more for when it comes time to make the food choice. I know that almost every restaurant nowadays has a website or an Instagram page or a Pinterest board. And you can go and look at their menu choices and read through their ingredient lists on some of them even, or at least check out the fats and proteins and stuff. And you can be prepared to make a better choice. So when the people in your office come by and go, we're going to lunch somewhere, do you want us to bring you something back? Then you at least don't just automatically pick the number 7 with extra fries or whatever. You've had some time to think about it. And that's really what it takes for most busy people is your health important enough to put it on your daily planner, your schedule, your iCal or your Google Calendar, along with everything else that you generally treat as more important than your health.
What do you do when you go someplace like a convention where there literally is not, quote, a healthy choice? Let's say that, an event that I attended recently in Long Beach was geared towards people in their 20s, and I literally saw people have ice cream for breakfast. What would you choose in that circumstance?
Well, sometimes you have to be willing to look foolish. There was a time a year or so ago when the last time I went on a trip away from my house for over a week, and we were staying in a motel that actually had a restaurant, but the first day we were there, we went to the grocery store and bought yogurt, we bought string cheese, we bought dry cereal, and half gallons of milk because those were the only size jugs of milk that would fit in our refrigerator in the room. So sometimes you just have to go, I know that people are going to give me funny looks if I do this, but there is a grocery store. I do have a rental car. There's nothing that's stopping me from going down to the grocery store and putting some stuff in my room that I can eat. So at least some of the day, I am not making these bad choices. And, you know, when you go to a convention, you pretty much have to, there are going to be parts of the day where you have to eat with the group. There's usually going to be a dinner or lunch or something where you're expected and where naturally you have to because, you know, if you're not eating with these people, you're missing out on a networking opportunity in general. So I understand sometimes there just aren't good choices, and that's when you have to decide to be kind and loving to yourself and not beat yourself up for not making a better choice or for being in a position, because I think that's one of the things most people don't realize is very little of this stuff is actually under our control. We can do some things to prepare ourselves better. We can have a better attitude. We can make better choices. We can even educate ourselves to where we know what the better choices are. And that in itself is a big thing. But sometimes you just have to say, I'm stuck. There isn't a great choice. I'm going to eat what is here, but eat in moderation and do better tomorrow.
And in fact, I love that you do say that, and you do say nobody wins all the time in your book.
Yep.
You also say that affirmations, you examine total body approach and say that affirmations are really easy when things are going great. But we're entrepreneurs, and sometimes things are not going to be perfect. What do you do when things, let's say you're having a Monday, somebody just called to cancel a big order, and a few other things are going wrong? How do you handle that without plunging into the nearest pint of ice cream or whatever?
Right. You know, I think that we would be a lot better off if people did make affirmations seem like they're easy, because they aren't easy, especially if you've never done them before or if you haven't been doing them for a very long time. Sometimes the biggest thing to do is just to stop saying the negative and say one good positive thing about yourself or about your situation. Sometimes you get to the point where you can hold those negatives back and not say them and just think them, because I believe that even if you keep yourself from saying them out loud, that's still a big step, because while thoughts have an impact on us, you start talking to yourself out loud and saying some of the things that maybe even people who don't like you wouldn't say about you, then that makes it really hard. And when it comes to finding the positive in a situation, I like to tell people, it's just like anything else. First, you have to know that it's there, and then you have to look for it. So, yeah, there are going to be those days when people cancel an order, when a sale doesn't go through, or when who knows what is going wrong, and you're like, please don't tell me it'll all be better if I say that I have all the abilities and talents, whatever other positive affirmation I wrote down yesterday when I was feeling better. So it is hard, but it's something that you get better at the more that you do it. And people have asked me, Max, you seem like a really positive, optimistic person. Is it easy? And I go, no, it is not easy. But if you do it enough, if you take the time to look for the positive and to find something that you can either take out of the experience that benefits you, that moves you forward, then sometimes that is all it takes. I know that one of the things, I don't know if I told you this before, but I've mentioned it several times in the past. I once sold a carousel for a guy where my commission was going to be $25,000. And I realized after I sold it that I didn't have anything in writing from him saying that he was going to pay me. He refused to accept my calls, stopped accepting my emails, and I've never gotten paid. And for a couple of hours the day that I accepted the fact that he wasn't sending me my money, I was pretty messed up. I was like, you know, this is a really bad, black, dark day. But then I decided, okay, what were the good things that happened here? And I made a list. I actually sat down and made a list. And the first thing I came up with was, well, Max, you sold $250,000 ride, and you sold it in 30 minutes. Because from the time I listed it until the time that we had the offer was literally 30 minutes. I decided that, okay, your social media networks are strong because you sold it through LinkedIn. I got a mention on Mutual of Omaha's AHA Now site, and they sent me a $100 gift certificate for some new clothes, which I needed because I had lost all the weight and thrown all of mine away. So I got new clients. A woman called me asking me if I could find her a carousel. My website got a lot of new traffic. There were positive things that came out of a really, what I would say was the worst day in the history of my business, helping people sell amusement equipment.
Wow, that is an impressive turnaround. What else would you recommend? Do you say in your book, a lot of us eat when we're angry or nervous? What's an alternate strategy when something has just happened, like that business owner who you know is not going to pay you for the carousel?
Well, I have an advantage in that my house is binge-proof. We don't have any of the food here in the house that you would go and, you know, I mean, it's not like we have a bag of potato chips most of the time. If we do, it's plain nacho. So we very rarely ever even have a half a pint of ice cream, much less a gallon. So it would have been very difficult for me to do that. But for most people that have a bag of Oreos laying around, I would say the first thing is, do you have somebody who you know that you can talk to about it? Is there something you could do that will get you that you can do on something else that you're involved in. A lot of times it is just deciding that you are going to find a positive. Like I say, you know it's there, you just have to look for it hard enough. And we all have those days where finding that little ray of sunshine takes real effort.
You also allude to social networks in your book and having a support system. What do you recommend for anybody who's trying to get healthier?
Well, there are lots of groups online and offline for supporting people who are trying to lose weight. But the real question is, are you using the groups that you're a member of? A lot of people are a member of groups and they get their Facebook posts. They see what the other people are doing in a particular group, but they never interact. They never ask anybody in the group for help, for suggestions, for encouragement. It's just like anything else. It doesn't matter how much you have of it if you're not going to use it. So there are great groups out there. I even belong to a group that's just for visually impaired people who are trying to lose weight or maintain their weight. So there are lots of groups out there. The question is, are you a member? Are you active? Have you shared your particular problems and issues as to why you're not able to lose the weight and keep it off? And if you're not giving people the opportunity to help you, then you might as well just unsubscribe from those groups.
It would go right back to, I think, what we talked about before, where you have the help available. It's almost an insult not to accept it.
Yeah, and I think we talked about that my first time here. I said that there are a lot of people out there who are waiting to help you, and if you refuse to ask people for help, then you're denying them the joy that comes from helping another human being. That's something I believe in firmly. But the best way you can thank somebody who helps you is to follow their suggestions, is to use their information. And, you know, with social media groups or support groups in general, you have that opportunity to get the help. And if you're not getting it, then it's really your own fault that you're not able to move forward. I have been lucky enough, the clinic where I had my surgery has support groups on and offline. I'm a member of several Facebook groups that I'm in actively. I have family that I connect with either here at the house or through Facebook and LinkedIn and stuff. So it's all about, are you using the resources that you have available to you? I think I mentioned in the book that a lot of people have workout facilities at their place of work, or they have insurance companies that will provide them part of the money to pay for a health club membership if they want one, and yet people hardly ever use those opportunities. I stayed at a motel last October for a conference for the National Federation for the Blind, and I asked them to take me down to their exercise area, and everything in the room was as if it had never been used before.
Wow. So people were pretty much walking by and ignoring it.
Yep. They spent money. The equipment had been there a while, but, you know, I can't go by sight, but I could smell the plastic and the leather. This stuff was still new.
I trust that you put it to great use.
I did my best. I at least broke in the machines I was familiar with.
In your chapter on exercise, you explode a few myths about exercise and getting equipment and getting the right gear. Would you tell me about that, too?
Well, I think a lot of people, again, are worried about how they're going to look or whether or not they have the exact right gear to work out with. That may be true for people who are in great health or who aspire to marathons and more difficult workout regimes. But for most of us, it's all about being active and doing some sort of exercise 15 or 30 minutes a day, 3 or 4 or 5 days a week. And that can be dancing in your office when nobody's looking or when you close the door. It could be me. I have an exercise bike and it's a treadmill, but they're both old hand-me-downs from my uncle, who's a marathon runner who replaces his equipment regularly. The only thing I wish he had a rower he didn't need, and I wish we wore the same size shoes, because he is always throwing away shoes that are just really good, but they're no longer good enough for him. And I think a lot of people, you know, they think they have to have the latest gear. You don't need, you know, you may look good in the yoga pants or you may aspire to look good in them, but there's really no reason you have to have them in order to start the first few poses and get going down the road towards yoga, if that's your thing. I say for some people, especially people that have never exercised before, even putting your shoes on and just stretching your muscles every day for a while can be a big step forward, because you just, even that little amount of exercise is an improvement over what you've been doing. And, you know, you keep yourself from hurting yourself, from shocking your system. I don't believe exercise should be painful. I believe it should, if you can find a way to make it fun, you should. If you can't make it fun, then at least distract yourself with a good book. But I'm about repeatable exercise, because if you don't do it every day or most every day, it's of no benefit.
Would you tell me a little bit about overhauling an unhealthy lifestyle and adding new habits?
Right. Well, I think a lot of people, they think about all the things they need to change or want to change about themselves, or they think about all that would go into getting, even losing the weight, being physically healthy, instead of focusing on, well, what is one thing I could do today and go ahead and start doing that? And it's well documented that most people can pick up a new habit in 28 days or 30 days, depending on who you believe. So if you figure one new habit a month, start with one thing that will lead you to better physical health or better mental or emotional or spiritual health. One thing, and as I mentioned, I started with switching liquids for solids because I knew that milk and juice were going to be two of my hardest areas. But for some people, it's either give up caffeine or replace some of your coffee with tea or some of your regular with decaf or some of the high test with regular. It could be deciding to walk for 15 minutes a day. It could be deciding to start affirmations or work on meditation. When we make a list of all the things we're not the way we want to be yet, usually most people come up with many more than what I just listed. You know, we tend to be pretty mean to ourselves when we start thinking about, well, I could change this and that. I need to be better at so many things. But the real thing is, can you pick one thing and focus on that for a month? And then at the end of the month, add something else to it. And in the meantime, don't get upset at yourself for not making more progress or not making the progress more quickly. Just be content with doing the best you can each day and either doing it better or doing more the next day. Even at this point, there are still things that I would like to improve about myself. I have quite a bit of skin and fat left over from when I was much heavier, and I have yet to find an exercise that will let me do something about that. So for people, they, you know, if you want to make a list of all your shortcomings, that's not something I would recommend. It's something that's negative and hurtful for most people. But I think there's probably one thing you could pick and you could say, I could start changing that today.
You also mentioned in your book that we say things to ourselves when we get on the scale, when we look in the mirror, that we probably wouldn't say to a stranger on the street. How do you get around that?
Yeah, I think one place where I actually am better off with not being able to see is the fact that I have no access to other people's images of what beautiful or sexy is. If I want to know how well I'm doing, I can ask friends or family what their opinion is of how I look now, and they all generally tell me I'm doing really good. But I don't have to look in a mirror, and I don't have to look at the magazines in the checkout stand. So a lot of the things that would try to tell me that I'm not good enough don't really ever come into my world. And I really wish it was easier for people who can see to eliminate a lot of these negative messages that come into our lives, whether we want them to or not. And in some people's cases, they actually go out of their ways to find these images that remind them that they're not good enough by other people's standards. So I like to focus on things I can actually tell based on what I do have available to me. So I can tell that I can now go up and down stairs and ramps without fearing that I'm going to fall down or get dizzy. I now know that I can walk from the end of the parking lot to any store in the mall if I decide I want to. You know, I know that the clothes I'm wearing are 40-inch waist and 1 or 2 extra large tall in a shirt. Those are things I actually know, but as far as, you know, how I look in the mirror, I don't really have a frame of reference for that particular question. But I think a lot of people who can see would have a much easier time with how they see themselves if they didn't have the mirrors or the other media telling them what somebody should look like. And that's one of the things I say. If you get to the point where you're pretty sure that you're good looking, then nobody can really tell you you aren't. But if you start off with the premise that you're not handsome, you're not sexy, you're not pretty, then it's pretty easy for the mirror, the scale, whoever else that wants to tell you that you're ugly or you're hideous and that you really should stay home. And that goes back to your community, because it really helps with things like that. It really helps to have some people who will remind you that you are beautiful and you are special.
I'm back on that sentence, what somebody should look like, and it occurs to me that we're all individuals. There really shouldn't be a what somebody should look like. We're all different. You talk about also positive people, but what if as an entrepreneur or maybe in the workplace, you just can't get away from a negative person? How do you handle that?
Yeah, sometimes you just can't do it. And so what you have to do are two things, in my opinion. One, you have to limit your exposure to them. And two, you have to continue to be yourself and be as positive, as optimistic, as on an even basis as you can personally. I live with my brother and my nephew and Penny, and there are times that my brother he can be somebody that you just don't want to be around. But over the last few years of spending a lot of time around him and him realizing that I'm not one of these people who wants to hear a lot of negative stuff, I've noticed a change in him. So for those people who just rub you the wrong way at work, I know it's difficult not to get irritated with them, not to wait until they walk off and say mean things about them. But the real question is, how are you going to react to the way that you interact with them? And if you can get to the point where they see you as somebody that's positive, that's optimistic, that, you know, the kind of person you are around everybody else, then hopefully they will change a little. But if they don't, then you just have to limit your exposure. You just have to stop drinking coffee with them, stop going to after-work events with them. And like you said, it can be difficult, especially if you work with them, or even worse, if they happen to be your boss.
I'm curious that you've made a couple of references to coffee and not drink coffee as much. What don't I know about that in nutrition? Is it really bad if you're trying to lose weight?
Well, the real problem with coffee is not in itself, but the fact that it's a diuretic. So if you're trying to increase your water intake and using your water in order to help keep you from being more hungry, then anything that forces the water right back out of you is defeating that purpose. So the other thing is that coffee and caffeinated tea also affect the ability of the body to absorb vitamins. So if you're taking a multivitamin every day, but you're taking it with your coffee or tea, it's as if you weren't taking the vitamin in the first place with a lot of them.
I never knew that till just now. Thank you. I did mean to ask you about that wonderful title, and we got a little bit sidetracked, but how'd you come up with "It's Not the Cookie, It's the Bag," and what do you mean by that?
Well, it's something that we've realized over the last few years, and that is that if you tell yourself that you're never going to have another cookie or another bite of ice cream or another something, pretty much all you're doing is telling yourself you will eventually not only have it, but you'll have a whole bag full or a whole carton full. Depriving yourself just doesn't seem to work. People can do it for short periods of time. They can either eat certain foods or not eat certain foods. So what we've figured out is that it's better to bring a small amount of something that we like into the house, eat it, get our fix, and be done with it than it is to not eat those foods at all. So we will buy one package of frozen cookie dough, bake it, and split it. If you split it four ways, everybody gets five cookies. We will routinely buy a candy bar and split it three ways. If we buy a whole loaf of French bread, we will cut it in half and put half of it in the freezer. The thing is that as consumers, we are always telling manufacturers and processors and restaurateurs, we want more and we want it for less. And so they do what we want. They provide us as much food in the bags as they can get and still make a profit. So if you bring home an entire bag of Oreos, I think there's, 60 or 72 cookies in a bag of Oreos?
Not sure, but there sure are a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of them in there. You know, if you bring home an entire bag, the odds are it's much more difficult to have willpower to keep yourself from eating those cookies when you've got that entire bag or entire box, or when you've got an entire half gallon or gallon of ice cream. So there are lots of ways where you can have a small amount of something. One of the things I remember as a kid was whenever I would help my grandmother or mom bake cookies, they would always read that line that says, or to double the recipe. And I think more people, there should also be a line in there that says to make half as much, or to make a regular batch and put half the batch in the freezer. You know, so the real problem isn't the cookie. It isn't the ice cream or the candy bar. The real problem is how much is the quantity and our general inability to not eat the, you know, whatever's left in the bag. At least that's been our experience. And in my family, we've got a lot of people who have had trouble with their weight. Between people in the amusement industry, people who travel a lot, you know, there's a lot of those people have trouble with their weight issues. So it just seems like, you know, never having another cookie again doesn't work, and bringing a whole bag of cookies into the house doesn't work. So why not just bring a few cookies in, be done with it, and then you don't feel horrible when the bag is empty and you're taking it to the trash can.
You made me laugh out loud at one point in your book because you mentioned your family's from the South, and giving up sugar in your iced tea is a really hard thing. It seems like Southern cooking is take a pound of grease, add a pound of sugar, fry the whole thing in lard, and put whipped cream on top. My family's from Maryland.
Yeah, you're not far wrong. You're not far wrong. And, you know, with Southern families, with most families, but especially with Southern families, we show love with food. And more food means more love. So we don't generally believe in portions. I mean, a portion is generally however much will fit in the pan. So, I mean, we get invited to, during the Thanksgiving and Christmas holidays, we are now everybody's best friend because they know that, you know, we can only cut the recipes back so far, and we got to give that food to somebody. So, you know, we will have a half a pan of macaroni pie to give away. You know, we will have probably half a bowl of potato salad that has to go. You know, we will have quite a bit of food, but we generally will eat a reasonable size plate, and then we'll eat it again that night. And then whatever's left, we get it out of the house as quickly as we possibly can. And so, you know, if you got a neighbor who you haven't met, who you've never said hi to, and you've got a half a pound of brownies staring you in the face, and you're wondering what's going to happen to them between now and tomorrow morning, go over and introduce yourself. You know, at Thanksgiving, we make one pie now instead of six. And, you know, you're from the South. You know that that's another thing. You know, our relatives probably laugh at us. You can't believe they had only one pie for Thanksgiving.
I'm nodding my head yes here because I'm remembering Christmases. Okay, cakes were our thing, but one cake, no way. Make it three with cookies.
Exactly. And yeah, doing tea without sugar was hard. Used to, when my dad was alive, we would have cobbler, seemed like once a week most often. And, you know, cobbler is one of the worst baked goods, period, as far as the amount of sugar and fat that goes into making one. But, yeah, in the South we eat, and we generally eat a lot. And, like I said, that's been one of the big things, has been figuring out exactly how much we need to feed us, and then changing our recipes to where we don't make so much more than we actually need, because leftovers are the same as cookies and ice cream. If the food is there and it's easily accessible, it's just making it way too easy for you to eat when you're bored, tired, stressed, because we all have those times when we're going to eat stuff we shouldn't, or we're going to eat more than we know we should. The thing to do is to try to put yourself in positions where you don't have those opportunities as often, and that's where the whole idea of it's not the cookie, it's the bag came from. Like I say, if you have to at least put the leftovers in the microwave, you know, it's one thing if they're on the stove, it's another thing if they're in the refrigerator, but if they're in the freezer, then you've got a few more seconds or minutes where reason might come in and you might say, I don't really need this, and put it back.
What are some of the alternatives you found for the recipes themselves, where you have something that's healthier, but it doesn't taste like sawdust as many diet foods do?
Well, that's you know, that's something that I'm going to have to admit that I didn't think of. I didn't think of putting in the book, so I'm going to have to sit down and talk to my mom and my brother, the ones who actually do the cooking, and ask them. But the one big difference that I can tell you is, instead of using like bacon or other cooking grease, you know, we use corn oil or other vegetable oil. Now we don't bread everything before we cook it. And I know that there's a lot less butter used in what we do eat as far as putting it in the food while it's cooking is putting it on the food when it comes to the table. So that is a question I didn't anticipate. I'm not going to tell anybody that I have all the answers or that I'm perfect, so I'm going to have to consider maybe adding another chapter or a section, or maybe I can get my mom to come out with a cookbook.
Didn't mean to put you on the spot there.
No, it's a valid question, and it's something that needs to be addressed. And, you know, this is the first time that I've done an interview about the new book, and sometimes you think you've thought of everything until somebody goes, well, what do you think about that? And then you realize, oh, shoot, I left something out. So I appreciate the question. Don't worry about putting me on the spot, because it's one that needs to be answered. But in general, we don't deep fry anything. We don't use a lot of mayo or butter. We've generally used the, I can't believe it's not butter, and other replacement spreads. But the real big difference has just been the amount of food we cook, not eating after dinner, not eating stuff like cakes and pies, not eating to excess when we do. So it's been a lot of little changes, and yes, they have changed the way they prepare the food, and that's something I'll definitely look into.
Before we have to wrap up here, and wow, has this time flown, I would love to hear a little bit more from you about what you can take with you to, let's say that you're in a hurry and you don't have a whole lot of time, but you're making your lunch and you can take it with you to your work or whatever that'll be healthier than what's around.
I really enjoy, I recently found a new kind of granola called Kind. It comes in a bag, or it also comes in bars. It's only got 4 ingredients, and it's not like a lot of them that has a bunch of extra sugar or fats included in it, and it's something that's really enjoyable. I've found that I like peanuts. I like to eat them out of the shell, and, you know, you can grab like a bag of the peanuts still in the shell, or you can get them, you know, already shelled. There are even companies now making them where you have a box that has like 8 or 10 bags of nuts in them, and the bag of nuts is actually a reasonably sized single serving for somebody like me. So for a regular grown adult, you know, not one of those things where they tell you it's a serving and really it takes 2 or 3 servings to make a serving. So those are something that's good, and generally you can take nuts with you. Freeze-dried fruit is good. Jerky is good. My favorite is the string cheese, but I don't think you can carry that just about anywhere, because I think it has to be refrigerated.
Yeah, very hot weather, that might not work too well.
No, but there are some good jerkies now, and I tell you, I didn't think they would be this good, but I've been told it's because they're freeze-dried. When you buy dried fruit, if you buy it sun-dried, or if you buy it where they don't tell you how they dried it, it's usually had a bunch of sugar added to it. But if you buy it freeze-dried, it's generally just the sugar that's in the fruit. But I've recently started buying a bag that's mixed cranberries, blueberries, and raisins that are dry, freeze-dried in a bag mixed, and I swear it's like eating candy.
Oh, my, that sounds good. Mm.
And people are going to tell me, you're out of your mind, there's no way a fruit can taste like candy, but I'm telling you, this stuff is, it's so good. When you eat it, you think there's got to be something wrong with this. You know, we're going to find out they're all lying to us at some point down the road. It's that good.
You and I are listening to author and entrepreneur Maxwell Ivey Jr., and we're talking about his new book, It's Not the Cookie, It's the Bag, an easy-to-follow guide for weight loss success. Max's latest book, It's Not the Cookie, It's the Bag, is now available both on Amazon.com and on his website, theblindblogger.net. Go to theblindblogger.net/books. That's theblindblogger.net/books.
I don't know about other people out there who write books with me. I get scared every time I do this. I know it's only the second time, but it's like when you get close to the end of actually having it appear on Amazon and create space, it's like, are they going to like it? Are they going to enjoy it? Are they going to think he doesn't know what the heck he's talking about? Are they even going to buy it? And that's, you know, one of those things that happens to anybody who is creative. But I think a lot of people who are creative don't admit to being scared. So it makes the people doing it for the first time think that there's something wrong with them if they're scared. So I hope anybody that's working on a book or an album or a movie or something like that, that they don't let all those gremlins that seem to come out of the woodwork when you get close to the end, people from sharing their work with the rest of us, because everybody has got something to teach us. It's a shame, it's a disappointment, it's a waste when they don't share what they know, what they've experienced, and what they've learned with the rest of us.
What were things like for you after you put out your first book, Your Leading You Out of the Darkness? What kind of reception did it get?
Well, it got great reviews. Everybody who reviewed it on Amazon gave it 5 stars. People who have read it have said that it's a great book. I've been personally disappointed that more people didn't take advantage of the email in it and report on their progress working through the steps. But I've since learned that that's something that happens with a lot of personal development books, that many people will buy a book and maybe they read it, maybe they don't, but just because they buy the book doesn't mean they're actually going to take the steps and do anything with what they learned in the book. And so I've had, I would say maybe 10% of the people who got the book have worked through the steps, but very few of those even went through all the way to the end. And I hope that it helped them in some way. I hope that they were able to take at least 1 or 2 steps closer to their goal by reading the book. And with this new book, I hope that I give people things to think about. As I think I say in the end of the book, I hate calling it the conclusion, because with a journey like losing weight and getting healthy, it never ends. And I hope that by reading the book, people start to get ideas, they start to think creatively about their own personal situation and what kinds of things they can do on a daily basis to give themselves a better chance. None of us win every time. Most of us lose more than we win, actually. But that's just because we haven't really sat down and thought about it. We haven't asked for help. So I'm hoping people will read this book and they'll make progress. They'll get healthier. We will see.
Max, thank you for your time today.
Well, thank you for having me back on. I appreciate you doing the show and for allowing me to spend some time with you. And I look forward to hearing from the listeners. And if they have any questions or they want to connect with me, there is the contact form on theblindblogger.net. And I'm always up for meeting new people, making new friends, and sharing my experiences. So don't feel like you have to buy something or hire me or whatever to say hi. And I really do look forward to hearing from people. So appreciate you having me back on again. You have a great week.
You and I have been listening to entrepreneur, author, and success coach Maxwell Ivey Jr. You'll find Max's latest book, It's Not the Cookie, It's the Bag, an easy-to-follow guide for weight loss success, on Amazon.com. or on his website, theblindblogger.net. Go to theblindblogger.net/books. That's theblindblogger.net/books. The preceding podcast was for informational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice. If you have questions about nutrition or any health-related issues, please contact a medical professional. And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more Over Coffee podcasts, our link is twomaverix.com. That's twomaverix.com. And you can contact us at twomaverix@gmail.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.